Kia ora, my name's Gareth.
And I'm Roger.
And together we're from Walk Tours NZ. And welcome to this podcast series called Out on the Streets, Pride and Place. And it's a four-part podcast series exploring how we create rainbow walk tours from dreaming and planning to walking and reflecting.
So what are we covering in the four episodes? In the first episode, we talked about why walks are so fulfilling, and we stepped through the history of Walk Tours NZ and began to start the process of creating a new tour.
We then looked at researching and writing and identifying our tour stops and ways of handling tricky topics.
And in this episode, we'll look at promotion and marketing, managing registrations, and enhancing the tour with things like visual flipbooks and audio clips.
And then in our final episode, we'll look at what happens on the day of the walk tour, how to manage participants, and then we'll reflect on some really exciting outcomes that we have experienced through doing these walk tours.
So this episode is called The Invitation. And first up, just a couple of questions that have come in. One from Jamie asks us about how we handle using contemporary labels on historic figures. For example, would we say Catherine Mansfield was bisexual or lesbian?
That's a really interesting question. So for us, we've landed on not using labels for historic figures unless they have self-identified with that label. We have, however, signposted stories, so we've said things like, this is possibly an example of a non-binary life, or this is an example of a potentially a homosexual relationship, but we don't explicitly label people because it is just so hard, isn't it?
They simply will not stay in the little boxes that we want to put them in. It's a bit of a problem.
But another example is, for instance, the relationship between Effie Pollen and Ursula Bethel. Now, they lived together for decades, and they shared so much of their lives together. Now, whether that was a homosexual relationship, whether it was a homosocial relationship, or whether it was something else, I think the fact is that they obviously loved each other, and actually what does it matter if we actually don't label it anything?
Exactly. They may not have had a word for what they had apart from a deep friendship, maybe.
So ultimately we would say really try and avoid labelling where you can, unless it's self-identification from the person you're talking about.
So I had another question. This is from Clara. And Clara asks, would you recommend a script while walking?
I would say yes. I would recommend a script with bullet points, specifically the five or so key bullet points for each stop. I suggest that because if you don't have a script, you could easily go off track and you could easily be at a stop for 10 or 15 minutes. And while you may find that really energizing in terms of it gives you an opportunity to say 10 to 15 minutes worth of speech, for the walkers, and particularly if it's a 90-minute walk tour, that can really balloon out into a day excursion.
Which is maybe more than they're asking for. Good to keep a bit of discipline in terms of what you're going to say and make sure that you get around to saying it, and then get to your next stop.
And let's get to our next stop now, and let's talk about where we are in the tour process. So over the last couple of episodes, we've looked at how to identify tour stops and also create the narrative for each of those stops. But now, how do we bring the tour alive? How do we make it more engaging?
Well, we've found that things like handouts, image flipbooks, and audio snippets can be really, really useful. And so let's start with the flipbooks. Would you use flipbook images versus using an iPad?
Yes, I would. And the reason I would, or the reason that we do, is that flipbooks, so these are just plastic folders with photocopied images in the book, and they have a bit of cardboard in the back of each image just to kind of give it a bit more weight. These are really useful because One, it's cheaper. If it's raining as well, that, you know, you're not worried about kind of getting the flipbook wet, whereas if it was an iPad, that would be a bit of an issue. But also, I think during COVID and post-COVID, people are very wary about touching the same surfaces. So like if it's an iPad and people are, you know, using their fingers on the screen, people are a lot warier about that, whereas a flipbook is a lot easier to hand around.
Just a lot more durable, I think. I mean, I've dropped so many flipbooks, and that's fine. You just pick it up and use it again. I wouldn't be able to drop as many iPads and be able to use them again.
So if we look at just flipbooks, I think we go between either one or two flipbooks a tour, and that's very much dependent on the number of people on the tour. So I think if you've got like, you know, say like 1 to 10 people, you could easily just have one flipbook. Any more than 10, you'd probably want two flipbooks of the same images that you can hand around at the same time. I mean, what kind of images do you think are good for flipbooks?
Flipbooks are really, really useful for images of, you go to a location, say, but the building isn't there that was on the site of the location where you now are. It's great to be able to show a picture of, say, a venue or a person even who's no longer there when they're really in their heyday. And you can often find images of bars and clubs and things when they're up and running. And that really helps to bring alive something which actually may not be there physically anymore. Context setting too, they're really useful. Newspaper headlines look great, blown up and put into a flipbook. Using them for quotations, simple graphics too, are really effective. That has helped to sort of bring alive some of the history in a way that a vacant lot doesn't.
There's a bit of a sequence in terms of how to show images. So when we start talking about a particular topic, we will raise the flipbook above our heads and slowly pan it around the participants so everyone can see the image, and then as the story progresses, we pass the flipbook or flipbooks around the participants so they can take a closer look. So the key is to have big bold images work really well at a distance, and you probably want to not necessarily focus on images with lots of detail, because as soon as you introduce detail, people will want to look at the detail, which is fantastic because everyone's engaged. But it is slightly problematic if you have a larger group, say if you have 10 or 20 people each wanting to look at and study the images. So really you want to concentrate on big, bold images that can be seen from a distance, but also have some kind of interest when you're looking close up.
So where might you find images for these flipbooks?
A lot of places online. So things like Wikipedia is a great starting point. There are Facebook groups around the country. So in Wellington, there is a group called Lost Gay Wellington that has a lot of old images of Wellington. City Council archives, libraries, so like Wellington Recollect in Wellington is a fantastic resource. The National Library of New Zealand. And maybe a really good starting point would be something like Digital NZ, which is an aggregator website. So it brings over 30 million records of things that have happened in New Zealand into one place which you can search on.
When you're searching for things, you can look up names of venues, names of people, of course. Street names is a great thing to search on. Try and be as lateral in your thinking as possible. I was trying to find the public toilet, which was beside the Wellington Library and was famous for its association with the Colin Moyle affair. I couldn't find an image of it anywhere, but it was just through looking through for something else that I just saw the corner of it when it was in Harris Street in a photo, and that allowed me to just refine my searches a bit more to that particular part of the street and came across a couple of really good images of that particular public toilet.
Many of these websites that we've just mentioned, they not only show the historic images online, but they will make them available for download and reuse. And a big thing to remember is that just because it's online doesn't necessarily mean it can be reproduced. So you do need to check permissions about what you can and can't do.
This is really important too, because we have found that people often take photos of the photos that we have got in the flipbooks and then they put them up online. So that just compounds the offence if you haven't got permission to use them in the first place.
There's also Papers Past, and Papers Past is just an amazing treasure trove of newspapers going right back to the 1860s and possibly a little earlier. And they have some really amazing images of individuals. So for instance, we mentioned Effie Pullen before. Now there's an image of Effie Pullen, I think in the Christchurch Press, I think. And it's very pixelated, or how they used to print newspapers was through dots, and so it's a very low resolution image. And one thing we haven't tried in our walk tours yet, but we're looking at trying, is the idea of putting those old images into generative AI to reinterpret the image and make it photorealistic again. We've tried it with Effie, and the output is amazing. We're not trying to fake the images, but we're trying to make them and give them a bit more kind of life. And certainly if we were going to do this, we would want to make sure that we actually acknowledge on the image that it's a interpretation, it's an AI interpretation, and here actually potentially is the original photo as well.
The key is not to rewrite history, but to celebrate it and to bring it to life as much as we can. What about handouts?
Handouts are great. So when we're talking about handouts, we're talking about things like business cards and postcards, but actually probably more specifically, we're talking about bits of paper that we can hand out with things like timelines on. So for example, when we do the Carmen Rupe tour, we offer a handout of a timeline of Carmen's life in Wellington and the businesses she opened and the location of the businesses, along with a link to an online map so people can take that away. This is incredibly useful because when we actually do the walk tour, we're crossing the different times. We're all over the place with times. It's very much a kind of a geographic location based tour, and time is coming and going, so that's incredibly useful.
How about audio? A really neat innovation in recent walk tours for us has been using audio snippets from the Pride NZ audio collection and putting them into some of the stops, and that just adds a whole new dimension in terms of introducing somebody else's voice rather than just us speaking, particularly for people who have who spoke very characterfully, people like Carmen Rupe, it's great to be able to play a little excerpt of her speaking, but it just adds real colour and something a little bit different to the walk tours. And we have a little speaker.
A little beatbox speaker, incredibly powerful. I mean, these are, so we've got a speaker that's battery charged and that we play audio from a smartphone that goes to the portable speaker, and it can easily be heard by, you know, 20 or 30 people in a public space. So I guess one of the key things is, if you are looking at audio excerpts, remember that you are in a public space, and so you have to edit appropriately. So I would not suggest using any kind of swearing or anything like that, any inflammatory content. I don't think is probably appropriate for a public space, but it really does bring the walk tours alive when you can hear a first-hand account of something that's happened.
I think people often like to have something to take away from walk tours, as well as some great stories and hopefully some pleasant memories. And one of the things that we've developed is the idea of giving business cards to people on the walk tours, which have a dual purpose. One, it's a little keepsake for the walker, but the business cards have got a link to a post-walk survey and also another link to the website for the walk tours. The survey is great because it gives us some you know, really valuable feedback on what people thought about the walk tour, and we always appreciate getting feedback. The particular business card that we've got on the back has a quote from Dr. Elizabeth Kedekede, and the quote is, What do we get up for in the morning if not to change the world? So that's a great quote, and it's a lovely thing for people to take away with them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's now move to talk about the tour frequency and the best times we've found for doing tours. So probably our best days are in the weekends, and we've found that either a Saturday or a Sunday works really well around about 1 o'clock. And we've also found that the duration of the tour is really good if you set it to about 90 minutes, so that's an hour and a half.
We've also found that, obviously because the weather is seasonal, particularly in Wellington, and we've got a range of walk tours, we like to think about what the season is likely to be when we are scheduling upcoming walk tours. So, you know, if it's going to be in the winter seasons, we're thinking about less exposed locations. We want to make sure that there's plenty of cover in case it's raining. Likewise, if it's going to be in the summer, we want to think about where there might be opportunities for shade where we can stop and do our talks there.
So we're actually advertising the walk tours around, you know, 3 months out from when they actually happen. So we want to kind of give enough time for people to plan to be available at the time. And that kind of brings us into what is our internet presence like? How do we advertise? Well, firstly, we have a standalone website. Now, this is a simple WordPress website, so it's pretty basic. It has a page per tour and also a simple registration form where people can register for the free tour, and that costs around about $5 a month to run that WordPress site. And we also have a Facebook social media account where we can create events for the upcoming tours. Registration, we found, was incredibly important, because prior to the time we were using registration, we would just say this is a free event and turn up if you want to. And so Roger and I would turn up and nobody else would turn up. It's like, it only happened a couple of times, but actually quite deflating. And so we thought, well, actually, we do need to have some kind of registration system so that if nobody registers, then we just don't do the tour. Thankfully, that is a very rare occurrence. And so the registration is filling in your name and email address on the Walk Tours website, and then that sends us an email. And that is for two purposes. One is to know that we've actually got, you know, someone on the tour, but we can also manage the tour numbers, and we also have a mechanism to contact people through their emails if we have to cancel or postpone the tour due to bad weather.
That's only happened a couple of times, hasn't it, really? But it is a very necessary component to the walk tour, being able to contact people just in case there is some unforeseen circumstance that prevents the tour from happening at that time. Interestingly, the sign-ups versus turn-up ratio is about 50%, and that's pretty standard, we understand, through the sort of volunteer sector. About 50% of people who express interest will turn up.
So if we were wanting a tour of, say, 20 people actually turning up and walking with us, we would be accepting registrations up to 40, just around 40 people, knowing that half of them won't turn up.
And this is really important too, particularly for some of the bigger festivals and events where there are actual limits to the number of people we can physically have on the walk tour. So it's really good to be able to keep an eye on how many people, but also really good not to close off applications to go on the tour too early, just so that we hit that sweet spot. So knowing about 50% of people are going to turn up, you know, has meant that we've been able to sort of have really good full walk tours for a lot of those big events that we've been involved in. Now, that 50% ratio might change if it was a paid for walk tour. People, if they've committed to paying some money, or if they've paid some money up front for a walk tour, are much more likely to turn up than if it's a free thing.
What kind of effect do you think COVID has had on the tours and tour numbers?
Well, when COVID happened, we moved online, as did everyone, really, and you still can still see some of those walk tours online now if you want to. But after the lockdowns ended, people were more wary, and to this day, I think they are, of group activities. So I don't think we've reached quite the heights of numbers that we did pre-COVID. But again, I think that's fairly general in the sort of events space.
In terms of promoting the tours on other websites, so we've tried promoting via websites like Event Finder, and they have a free option, but you do need to submit well in advance because of their processing times. But I would say be really wary about submitting to too many sites, because you also have to think, what happens if you have to cancel or postpone the event? How are you going to update all those different sites? Another option would be to, and particularly if you're doing a special anniversary type walk tour, would be to create a press release and then send it through to websites like scoop.co.nz, which may then get picked up by the media or a newspaper, and you'll get promotion that way.
What about paid promotion on social media?
We haven't had a good success with paid promotion on social media, because even though you can target your adverts generally, you will also get to people that don't want to see your advert. And we certainly have had some abusive responses, some negative responses to our adverts for walk tours coming from a very generalized audience. So I would not recommend doing paid promotion for your individual walk tours. Instead, I think doing something like direct marketing works really well. So for instance, we did a tour recently for the 40th anniversary of Bruce Burnett, who was an early HIV/AIDS activist. We had a Facebook event, but we also partnered with the Burnett Foundation, who promoted it to their members, and we also sent an A4 flyer to organizations that were in the same space as Burnett Foundation, so places like Body Positive and Positive Women, and we got an amazing turnout, and they were incredibly engaged, all the people that were on the tour, and it was just wonderful.
That was a really special one, that one. We found that our biggest audiences have often come through taking part in larger festivals, and we've been really, really fortunate to be invited to present walk tours for festivals like the Wellington Pride Festival, which happens regularly in March, Queer History Month, which is in July, the Festival of Architecture, which is September-ish, and the Wellington Heritage Festival, which is sort of October, November-ish. And each of those, they've invited us to come back. So that's a sign that whatever we're doing is working both for us and for them.
That kind of leveraging off larger festivals is huge, because it really brings in different audiences to the walk tours, and they are all incredibly engaged. And unlike when you're kind of advertising to the general public, sometimes you get those kind of haters online, this is not true for these different festivals. I think there's a threshold you reach. So you're going to a festival and then you want to see something interesting and something new, and every time we've done a festival, been part of a festival, we've always had incredible experiences.
We have. I mean, for instance, with the Wellington Heritage Festival, you know, we often have people come along who wouldn't necessarily come along to one of our rainbow walk tours, but are very interested in a rainbow history of Cuba Street, for instance, in Wellington, which was one of the walk tours, one of the virtual walk tours that we did recently. And they really enjoyed it. And it was a different audience to what we'd normally get. And great.
I do feel that we've come to the end of this podcast.
You think so?
I think we do. Please, we've loved your questions and your thoughts. Please keep sending them in. Love to hear from you. And in our next episode, which will be our last episode, what will we be looking at?
Well, I think we'll be looking at what happens on the day of the walk. Reflections on walk tours and talking about some unexpected outcomes.
Sounds interesting.
Stay tuned.
Ka kite.